that we might exist for the praise of his glory. Right there, St. Paul sums up the entire purpose of our Christian lives, which is to glorify the Father, that we might exist for the praise of his glory. And our existence itself does that, because we didn't have to exist. And so the fact that we were created, even when we're doing nothing, even when we're sleeping, the fact that we exist and have life is itself glorifying the Father for creating something so good. But it also glorifies the Father the more that we allow ourselves to be conformed to the image of the Son. The more that we allow ourselves to become like Jesus, the more we are able to glorify the Father in our life. And that's holiness, to become like God. And that holiness, the fact that all of us are called to that life, are called to become like the Eternal Son, is a big focus of Vatican II, the most recent Council of the Church, which says this about our vocation, about your vocation as the laity. It says, "For this reason, the laity, dedicated to Christ and anointed by the Holy Spirit, are marvelously called and wonderfully prepared, so that ever more abundant fruits of the Spirit may be produced in them. For all their works, prayers, and apostolic endeavors, their ordinary married and family life, their daily occupations, their physical and mental relaxation, if carried out in the Spirit, and even the hardships of life, if patiently borne, all these become spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ." All of those things listed are capable of becoming one great act of worship. Our whole life can become that act of worship, that we might exist for the praise of his glory. But if our life is to become an act of worship, that has to be nourished by the Mass. Because the Mass is Jesus's act of worship, the only truly perfect act of worship. And so if we're not drawing from that, it's impossible for my life to become an act of worship. And so the Mass is not optional. Without the Mass, our souls will starve. And when we talk about drawing from the Mass, letting our lives become that act of worship, it's about more than just showing up, right? We all know that. We know the difference between when we show up and go through the motions and when we show up and really give ourselves. And so what we're called to and invited to is full and actual participation, which doesn't mean external busyness, doing a bunch of things. I have to be the one to read or I'm not participating. I have to distribute communion or I'm not participating. That's not what we're talking about. It's an interior thing, first of all. That when I come to Mass, interiorly I'm offering everything I have to the Father in union with the sacrifice of Jesus. That I'm holding nothing back from the Father. And what assists us to do that well is the virtue of reverence, especially reverence for the Eucharist, where we receive Jesus himself. And so that reverence has two aspects, right? And the first is the interior aspect that starts in the heart. That interior reverence that's about the love with which I come to the Mass, the love with which I go to communion, which at the minimum means that I'm in the state of grace, that I don't have unconfessed mortal sin, but hopefully goes beyond that, right? Hopefully I'm coming with love and devotion and desire. I'm offering the people I care about. I'm asking for the things I need. All of those things put my heart in the right place of interior reverence. And that's essential if receiving communion is going to help us at all. We have to be receptive on the inside. But we're human, and we are not angels. And the difference there is that we have a body, and angels don't. That's the difference. And so what we do with our bodies also matters. Because an angel can adore God perfectly with soul and intellect and will, just like we can, but an angel can't bend the knee, an angel can't sing, an angel can't bow before the humility of God. And so the things that we're able to do with our body is our unique gift that only we can offer. No other creature can. And so if our reverence, which has to be in the heart, only stays in the heart, only part of us is participating. And our body doesn't have a job. And that's incomplete. So we want to let our interior reverence overflow into exterior reverence, which is that second aspect. Those actions that reveal the love we have for the Lord that's on the inside. And that's really helpful because we need to do that. Imagine if you're a married man and you love your wife so much and you're overflowing with love for her, and every day you come home and you never say it. You're like, hey, and that's all you ever say. Even though you love her so much on the inside, that's a problem. It needs to come out. It needs to be expressed. And so our exterior actions allow us to express what's on the inside. But they also allow us to train what's on the inside. Because it's really hard to make your heart do something. You can't directly impact it. And so sometimes we have to work from the outside in and let our bodies train our hearts. Just like maybe that same man comes home one day and he's had a terrible day at work and he's mad at the world and he says, I love you anyway, even though he's feeling nothing. That trains his heart and helps restore it to balance, to come back to where it really lives. And so our exterior reverence, our bodily signs, they help us, but they also help our neighbor. And that's perhaps just as important. Think about all of the times that you've seen somebody praying well or loving well, and they weren't doing it to be seen, but you happened to see it. Maybe you walked in to see your mom or your dad praying, and you were blown away. Or you came to Mass and you saw somebody who was just pouring their heart out and it shaped you. I experienced this distributing communion, watching some people come up and receive. I'm blown away by their love and it builds up my own faith. And so our exterior reverence, those signs we do, are important because we're a community. We're not in this alone. And so we can build each other up by our reverence. We are responsible for one another like a family. And the opposite is also true. If my heart is saying, this is Jesus, this is Jesus, this is Jesus, but my actions are all saying, this is bread, this is bread, this is bread, that makes it hard for others to believe. And so those of us in the sanctuary, but all of us in this church have a job to do to make sure we're sending the right message to one another, to build up our faith. And the church gives us some ways to do that. We're not just on our own to make it up, so we all have this custom of genuflecting or bowing before we enter the pew. That's one way of acknowledging, hey, there's something special here. There are all sorts of instructions in the missal for the priest, when he's supposed to bow, when he's supposed to genuflect, when he spreads out the cloth to catch any particles that fall from the host, what he's supposed to do when there are things sticking to his fingers so that he doesn't track the Eucharist all over the place. There's a reason that it takes us so long to purify the vessels back there, because that's the Lord. There's a reason that the church continues to hold up that we can receive on the tongue if we choose to. Because all of those things I listed are weird. People see them and they're like, what are you doing? That's bizarre. There's nowhere else in the world that we walk in and we bop down on one knee real quick That's weird. There's nowhere else that we walk up to a priest and we stick our tongue out. That's weird. But all of those things are weird precisely to send the signal that, hey, something's going on here. Pay attention. Figure out why we're doing this strange thing. It's a sign that something's going on. Okay, so practically, reverence, great. We're all on the same page. We all want to be reverent. Where do we start? And so for that, we're going to have summer school, first communion class, just because for some of us, it's been a long time. And so anyway, this is not meant to be a criticism, just a refresher. So if we're going to receive on the hand, we listen to the advice of St. Cyril of Jerusalem, who says, when you approach, come not with your fingers spread, but make your left hand a throne for your right, as if to receive a king, being careful unless you lose any portion of the host. For whatever you lose is like you lost one of your own limbs. For tell me, if anyone gave you grains of gold, would you not hold them with all carefulness, being on your guard against losing any of them? Will you not then much more carefully keep watch that not a crumb of what is more precious, that not a crumb fall of what is more precious than gold and precious stones? And so to receive on the hand well, please have flat hands. If they're sloping, it's really scary that the Lord's going to fall on the floor. Or please don't grab the host. This isn't the invasion of the body snatchers. We want to have a flat landing pad, a throne for the Lord. And we want to be attentive, unless anything be left behind without us noticing, especially if we receive one of the broken pieces from the large host, just to take a second glance and make sure there's no crumb left. And then if your hands are full because you're holding a baby or you had a terrible lawnmower accident or you were attacked by a shark as a child and you don't have the use of your hands, it would be good to consider receiving on the tongue in that moment, just so you're not trying to juggle the Lord back and forth through your one hand. And then if you choose to receive on the tongue and have never been instructed on how to do so, it's really helpful to just close your eyes, tilt your head back a little bit, and stick out your tongue a little bit. And please, close your eyes, because then that removes the temptation to try to help and to move yourself. Because when you move yourself, that's when things get awkward. But if you're holding still, it's much easier to receive reverently. So do all of these things really matter, or are they just kind of nitpicky things? Why, they do matter, because what we do shapes what we believe. And it shapes the belief of our brothers and sisters around us. And so you might not ever see it, but at the final judgment, when all things are revealed, your reverence might be the reason that someone chose to enter the church or returned to belief in the real presence of Jesus in the Holy Eucharist. And so, with this in mind, I invite you to make two resolutions. One, an interior resolution, and one, an exterior. So what could that look like? Well, maybe your resolution of something interior is, I'm never going to receive communion when I'm not in the state of grace. That would be a great resolution. Or, if I'm already in that practice, maybe I'm just going to go to confession more often to clean the house a little bit more for this wonderful guest. Or maybe I'm going to be more attentive when I receive or think about the way I receive. Or maybe I'm going to come with, those are exterior things. Maybe I'm going to go to confession more often, or I'm going to come with specific desires. Say, Lord, I need this through this Holy Communion. Please give it to me. Or come with specific things to offer, saying, Lord, this person, I give them to you. This situation, I give it to you. So all of those would be great interior resolutions, something to start doing today. And then exterior, which I jumped ahead to, maybe I'm going to be more attentive to genuflecting and to actually think about what I'm doing, that I'm greeting the Lord and not just see how fast I can do it. Or maybe I'm going to be more careful receiving, like I said, or think about the way I receive. Or maybe I'll spend a few minutes after Mass just in thanksgiving, thanking the Lord for coming to me, thanking him for dying on the cross and instituting the Eucharist so that I might receive him. And all of these things matter, because the more we love the Eucharist, the more our whole life can become an act of worship that we might exist for the praise of his glory.